Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. Since election night 2016, the streets of the U.S. have rung with resistance. People all over the country have woken up with the conviction that they must do something to fight inequality in all its forms. But many are wondering what it is they can do. In this series, we'll be talking with experienced organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers who have been doing the hard work of fighting for a long time. They'll be sharing their insights on what works, what doesn't, what has changed, and what is still the same. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
My name is Murad Alauda, and I'm the Director of Political Engagement at the New York Immigration Coalition.
They're back in court this week, and you've done a bunch of work around the Muslim ban. Can you tell us sort of where things are with that and where organizing around it is right now?
Sure. So right now, yesterday we kicked off, May 8th, we kicked off the week of resistance against the Muslim ban, and we're titling it No Muslim Ban Ever. And yesterday was the first hearing at the Fourth Circuit Court. And what we're thinking about doing now is continuously elevating the impact of the Muslim ban. And that's what we've been doing since the start of this, because, you know, when you hear of a travel ban or a Muslim ban, you really kind of feel detached without knowing the real human impact. And the human impact is really detrimental, especially to a place like New York, where we have like a huge amount of folks who are Muslim, who come from these six, originally seven Muslim countries,
right,
that have been impacted extremely. And we're not talking about folks who are pretty much coming here just as tourists, because the tourist economy is really built off of a lot of folks from the Middle East who are now going other places because they don't want to deal with coming and getting hassled in the state. So the human impact is, like, when we're talking about people being barred from coming here from Yemen, a war-torn country that's been in conflict for years now, you know, the impacts aren't simple as, like, oh, well, they can go somewhere else. No, they can't.
Right.
And the reality is, if they stay there, they're going to die. And that's the same thing that goes to Syria. We've been watching Syria unravel the past and seeing it go from devastation to even worse devastation. And seeing how folks who are Syrian, who are here as refugees, who are here as, you know, green card holders, as students, and hearing their stories about how this has impacted them in a way in which they are completely, have no other place to go. And if they stay there, their life is in danger.
Right.
So it's either going back to Syria and potentially being killed, or going to a refugee camp, which is another huge issue in another country where they're not allowed to work or go to school, and they're pretty much just in this internment camp, or come here to try to build a new life for themselves.
Yeah.
So the human impact on the Muslim ban, from the Muslim ban, is like actually core to what we're doing and what we've been doing since it came down in January till now.
Talk about some of the organizing and the actions that are going on this week for this week of resistance.
So today there will be a Twitter town hall answering any questions people may have about the Muslim ban. I think that you're going to see on social media, across Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, the elevation of people's stories who are impacted and why not only the human impact, but also how this goes against everything that we are as Americans and goes against our core values of freedom and fairness. So we're going to be having different events across New York State as a whole, from Buffalo down to Brooklyn, you know, really bringing people together to learn, to hear from each other and understand what it means for these folks who are impacted.
Yeah.
To have to deal with the anxiety and the uncertainty of something like this. Because let's just say that the court comes back and reverses the injunction.
Right.
The ban goes back into place automatically. And at the New York Immigration Coalition, if that were to happen, we are ready to go back to JFK and provide 24/7 legal assistance to people who are impacted.
Yeah.
To try to get them out if they are in flight and get detained when they land.
Right.
And to turn up the heat and the pressure in the streets so that the resistance movement that we've been building since, you know, December is actually activated. to show up and to turn out and show what our American values and what our New York is about, and showing the world that this is our New York and it's not reflective of this Muslim ban.
Talk a little bit about the history of the New York Immigration Coalition.
Sure. The New York Immigration Coalition was founded in 1987. This is our, we're turning 30 this year. We are the largest coalition of our type in the nation. We have over 200 members across the state of New York. So we have groups that we work with in Western New York, in the East End of Long Island, and everywhere in between. So we are in a particularly interesting position within New York where, you know, a lot of folks really see the immigrant New York population being located in downstate in New York City primarily, but that's not the case. We have member agencies who are refugee resettlement organizations in the Southern Tier, in Western New York. And what we know is that after 2000 and 2010, there's been a huge flight from those areas. And the way it's been repopulated has been through the resettlement of refugees, as well as new immigrant communities really reviving the economies and having them become thriving in these areas that have been pretty much in a recession for the past 20 or 30 years.
I actually live in one of those because I live in Newburgh. Talk about, I guess, sort of where things were before this election for the work you were doing and what has changed since.
So the work that we've been, the work prior to election day was pretty much planned out for us well in advance of the election.
Right.
So we had a what if Hillary Clinton wins an election and what if Donald Trump wins an election. And at first people thought we were crazy for doing scenario planning for both, because everyone pretty much thought it was, you know, clear who was going to win. But just being on the, you know, erring on the side of caution, we decided that it was really important that we do that. We've been, prior to the election, we were really looking at how, what kind of immigration, real immigration reform at the federal level look like. And, you know, how do we revive those costs in a way where we're providing the 11 million undocumented people a pathway to citizenship and to status in the United States. And the reality was is that whoever won, it was going to be a difficult fight.
Right.
It's just a different fight now.
Yeah.
So as opposed to just thinking about, you know, what is that pathway? Now we have to think about, you know, this large scale enforcement apparatus that's being created, that's building off of a huge enforcement apparatus that President Obama had already had in place. So with the news of Donald Trump being elected, we kind of dusted off our, you know, what if Donald Trump wins scenario plan and started to loosen it up. And then shortly after that, we kicked off our This Is Our New York campaign, which really is to illustrate the values of New York and how immigrants have been the backbone and the foundation of building this great state. And when we did that, people were pretty much really taken aback by it, because a lot of folks who are like native New Yorkers just were like, oh, well, my family came here 3 generations ago or 4 generations ago. And I don't really think of immigrants as a way of like how we built this city. And pretty much this city and this state was built on the back of immigrants and continues to be. So the hard work, the blood, sweat, and tears of everything that built these skyscrapers in New York City or these cities in upstate New York were built primarily with folks who are immigrants. And so we kicked off a march on December 18th, which attracted over 5,000 people. And we marched from the UN to Trump Tower to pretty much illustrate what the diversity of New York looks like. And that was a really harrowing and like amazing feeling to actually see the diversity that came out that day, because the reality was is that everyone was still kind of dealing with the shock of the election and the outcome of the election. And we had really done our due diligence in ensuring that every aspect of our communities were represented. And when we did that, it pretty much set the stage up for us to continue to be able to build upon the movement that we've been building for 30 years.
Right.
And shortly after that, we pretty much were able to respond quickly to every single instance and every negative anti-immigrant policy that Donald Trump put forward. And it started off with his announcement that he signed executive orders, promising that he's going to, double CBP, Customs and Border Patrol, and triple ICE enforcement officers. And then shortly after that, a couple days later, that's when he signed the Muslim ban. And for every single instance, we've been able to respond and respond in a way that really demonstrates how people in New York refuse to acknowledge and accept the anti-immigrant, anti-American policies he's putting forward. We have been able to build up our resistance movement built on people from all walks of life coming together to say, this is not right. This goes against who we are. And you can see through the actions that we've done at JFK when the Muslim ban came down, over 5,000 to 10,000 people showed up in a span of 4 hours. The next day, we had a march from Battery Park City, Battery Park, which overlooks the Statue of Liberty, and marched straight to the DHS building at 26 Federal Plaza in New York City. And over 30,000 people showed up to that. And after that, we had about 20 other events that drew thousands of people consecutively. So it became this huge resistance force on the ground, and not only on the ground, but in the courts, and providing people with the legal assistance that they needed for free. And that was something where we were able to demonstrate as an organization our ability to really put pressure on the streets, but also provide the legal expertise that was needed at that point to help people get out of the situation that they were in when they were stuck in JFK.
Right. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit actually about the way that essentially the way that people who had been doing this immigration work for a long time were able to, bring in new people and capitalize on this energy that people have now for wanting to resist Trump.
The fact of the matter is that folks are now realizing that we are all linked and our issues are all linked in a way. So if they're not coming for you today, they will be coming for you tomorrow. And I think that we've been able to really put the pieces of the puzzle together to illustrate how every issue, reproductive rights, healthcare, women's rights, the ability to, travel freely, the ability to practice your religion, the ability to fight for economic justice, are all interlinked, and we all have a shared common target. And it now is the presidency and the administration. Because the reality is that the same people who are coming after the immigrants and the Muslims are the same people going after women's rights and women's reproductive rights and, trying to destroy our economy. And all of this is interlinked because we're all connected and we're all on the same page and at the same place in life, where if one person is hurt, it's like, hurting your arm of the body, and then another part of the body gets hurt, and then another part of the body. We are one living organism, and we have to, stand up for each other. And I think that that's really what's been resonating with people, that we, and this goes for people who've been active in, civic life, and for people who've never been active. And the reality is that the folks who've never been active have now really felt the burden and the pressure of their lives being impacted and showing up because it's the right thing to do. And to illustrate that our values are not similar at all to the man who's president right now, who comes from our city and our state and was born and raised here. And that's been, the connector for everyone who's been able to start coming out and continue to come out. And there's been a lot of talk of protester fatigue, and the reality is that we're not really seeing that. And we keep seeing people continue to show up and more people coming out to support.
Yeah.
And we've been in a pretty interesting position where the work that we've been doing prior to this year is really coming to the forefront, because we've been saying this for a very long time. Under President Obama, we had the most people deported under a single president, and we were fighting back against that, and now we're seeing it even more accelerated and looking as if it's going to be, he's going to surpass potentially what Obama was able to do. So we want to make sure that what we've been doing continues to grow, and grow in a way where it's being sustainable and intentional and meaningful for the people who are coming out and supporting these issues that are really pretty much resonating and really hurting people, because if one person's getting hurt today, someone else will be getting hurt tomorrow. And that's what we saw when we did the protest in December, launching the This Is Our New York campaign, and then what we saw at JFK,
right,
and what we saw the day after in Battery Park, and what we saw at the next 20 events that we did every day until the first Muslim ban EO was pulled back. So I think the reality is that, you know, what's really coming, bringing people together, is that all these issues are now resonating with people in a way in which it never did before.
Again, speaking of protest fatigue, as we're talking, there are people in front of Harlem Success Academy because Paul Ryan is there today. And that the Trump
yes,
was...
And,
yeah. Okay.
You know, people are out there today at Harlem Success Academy because the man who wants to destroy healthcare is meeting with the woman who wants to destroy public education. And the intersections there are immense. So we want to make sure that, you know, we're supporting, and we're not just asking people to show up to our stuff, but we're showing up to other issues that do impact our communities as well.
And so in New York, on the one hand, you have a Democrat-controlled mayors and legislature and all of the important positions in the government. And so that means that a lot of them have come out and said, you know, made the right noises about wanting to protect immigrants from Trump and things like that. On the other hand, you still have these ongoing fights around things like broken windows policing. So I wonder if you could talk about the sort of challenges of negotiating with both a national government that is just completely hostile and then a local government that sometimes is not hostile and sometimes still is.
I think I'm just going to put it out there, it's completely different. Like, I don't want to compare and contrast because they're extremely different.
Yeah.
But the reality is that there are similarities. So in the city, we have a mayor who's extremely supportive of immigrant communities and a speaker of the New York City Council who's been the biggest advocate and the biggest champion of immigrant communities ever. Like, if you look at how much money has been invested in immigrant communities under New York City Speaker Melissa Marquez-Burrito, you will see that she's really been innovative in thinking about ways that we can best use public dollars to bring together all of our communities. And she's really been a champion on that front. The mayor has really been, for the most part, been extremely great on the immigration front, but the reality is that we can't just talk about immigration silos anymore when we have policies that criminalize people for very minuscule things, and that then puts them on the pathway to deportation. And the fact of the matter is that when we launched our New York City priorities this year, ending broken windows policing was part of our recommendations to the city. And the recommendation wasn't just put in there because we thought it'd be great to have, you know, intersection priority. It's in there because it's impacting all of our communities. And the reality is that if we continue to practice, if broken windows policing continues to be a practice that the city does not end, then we are going to continue to streamline and put people who are already vulnerable and even more vulnerable and potentially deadly situation with becoming targets for deportation.
Right.
So while we have these great initiatives that the mayor is rolling out, we also have moments where, you know, there's some clashing where we're like, well, we understand you want to defend our, you know, our immigrant New Yorkers, but we also need to defend them by ensuring that our Black, Latino, and other immigrant communities aren't being impacted by these policies that have been put into place during some of the most racist and bigoted xenophobic administrations ever. And to have someone like our mayor now continue to support broken windows policing is really a detriment not only to the immigrant community, but low-income communities across the city.
And so if you're talking to people who want to get involved in organizing around immigrants' rights, around fighting the Muslim ban, things like that, what advice would you give people, especially if they're maybe not in New York City or in a big city where the groups to join up with are immediately obvious?
If you notice what's happening across the nation has been very, very, like, I've never seen anything like this in my life, where groups are now, like, people and communities are coming together and meeting their neighbors, simply getting to know their neighbors so that they know who they are living next to, which kind of seems like a very easy thing to do and something that's very, like, common sense-ish, but for the most part, has not been happening. So the very basic thing is get to know your neighbors, get to know their stories, understand where they're coming from. If you are living somewhere where there isn't any big group organizing around this, create your own group. And you've seen that hyper-local organizing across, you know, I've seen it across the city and the state, and it's literally across the states that surround us where these groups have, like, formed to fight back against hate, or these groups have been created to, like, really take the task and hold elected officials accountable. Join a group, understand what policies that Congress and the Senate are introducing to really pretty much that will impact their lives. And then if you are living in a big city or a big state that has immigrant rights organizations, contact them. See if there's a way that you can volunteer. If you have a specialty that you do, if you work in tech, every organization needs tech support. If you work in graphic design or in the design world, hopefully they can create materials that make it exceptionally streamlined for them to get their message out. Or donate. I think donating is a very simple and easy way that people can really be involved in an organization's longevity, as well as showing up to events, showing up to protests, showing up to actions. You know, we don't have the courtesy of, like, right now providing people with excessive notice of protests anymore because things are happening at such a fast pace that protests are created within minutes of each other so that, you know, we can really step up and fight back. Because the reality is if we don't put pressure on the streets or in the courts, then we're in a losing battle. And we're in it for the long haul. So I think thinking about it as a way of, like, how do you take care of yourself to ensure that you can continue doing the work that you want to do is very important as well. And if you're really interested and you're in New York and you want to sign up for the New York Immigration Coalition's Action Alert, it's easy. Text NYIC to the number 864237. And you'll be receiving constant updates of our actions that we're doing across the state.
So you gave us the action alerts, but what other ways can people keep up with you and your organization?
Follow us on Twitter. I think a really great conduit for getting information out has been Twitter. You can definitely follow us there. Personally, I'm on Twitter. My handle is Hey, It's Murad. And follow the New York Immigration Coalition Twitter, which is the NYIC, and like us on Facebook to figure out how we can how you can participate in the stuff that we're doing. And it's not something that we tell people that you have to show up to everything, but it's great when we have a strong network of people who are willing to stand up and fight back for all of us.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Fayebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.